Don't give a damn. A Yuri on Ice fan work written by Forichelle and read by Lunchy. Mari, through the years. Mari didn't remember much about her life before she turned four. There were faint sense impressions. The hot water of the onsen, the cold salt of the sea, the soft, rough cotton of a futon against her bare skin in the sticky heat of Kyushu summers. Standing at the threshold of the onsen, one hand gripped firmly in her mother's skirts and the other on the worn foot of her toy rabbit. Staring into the courtyard, the yellow squares of light, the tall timbers of the place that would come to define the parameters of her life. 4. Mari never liked the yellow hat she had to wear to school. She got into fights with bullies and had curly flyaway hair, shorn close to the scalp because the onsen was always too hot to bear any longer.
"Boo!" taunted silly Hasegawa Keiya. "Mari's like a boy!"
"Yeah?"
Mari balled her hands up, feeling strangely stung.
"Well, at least I'm a better boy than you!"
Then she punched Keiya, who cried like the brat he was.
"Mari!"
exclaimed soft, lovely Kanao-sensei, holding a snivelling Keiya against her soft tummy. When Mari looked at Kanao-sensei, she felt a sour tenderness in the cavity under her ribs.
"Why... I need to speak to your mother."
Mari blinked up at Kanao-sensei. Mari hadn't moved from where she'd been playing with the wooden blocks since Kanao-sensei had come into the classroom with Keiya attached to her like one of those gross, slimy things on the rocks by the sea.
"Mama can't," said Mari.
"Huh? Why?"
"She sleeps all the time at home now," Mari said reasonably.
Kanao-sensei stared at her before shaking her head and reaching out to pet Mari's hair. Mari wasn't sure what happened after that, but the next day, Ka-san, who was round like a beach ball but not half as colourful and really did spend a lot of time lying down at home, heaved herself to school with Mari.
"Ka-san," Mari said solemnly, "you don't have to."
"Oh, darling," said Ka-san. "I think I really do." But she held Mari's hand all the way to school. Kanao-sensei's eyes went round and she raised her hand to her mouth when Mari carefully led Ka-san in through the gates.
"Katsuki-san!" Kanao-sensei exclaimed. "Oh no! I'm so sorry for the trouble! Oh, if only I'd known!"
Which was silly, really, Mari thought. Mari had already told her.
"Ahara, it's no trouble at all," said Ka-san warmly,
and pushed Mari off to her classroom. Of course, Hasegawa Keiya was already there. He was sitting on a table, legs swinging, when Mari wandered in. She went to the back of the room to hang her bag and the hated hat up.
"Mari's in trouble," Keiya sang.
Keiya, Mari thought. Just never learnt. Saori-chan skidded into the room just then, breathless.
"I saw Katsuki-san talking to... Oh, Mari!"
"I saw Mari's mother too,"
said Keiya.
She's so fat.
Mari scowled and marched over to Keiya.
She's not. She's got my little brother in her tummy, and I'm going to teach him to be the best boy ever.
And then Mari punched Keiya so hard he fell off the table. He really should have known better.
7. When Mari was 7, she tried to teach Yuri how to do handstands by pulling him up by his feet. But Mari was short and stout, like the teapot, and Yuri was small and round and heavy and wriggling in protest. So she dropped him, and he rolled over on his head, sat up with his eyes and mouth wide open before bursting into tears. Mari gasped.
No, no, Yu-chan, no!
Unfortunately, To-san bustled in at exactly that moment, took in the scene and knelt down to give Mari a stern look.
It wasn't me,
Mari said immediately.
No? Asked To-san, who wasn't crinkling his eyes.
Yuri crawled closer to To-san, who reached out with one sturdy arm and swept Yuri in against his chest. Mari withstood To-san's disappointed look for as long as it took Yuri to turn around in To-san's hold and glare up at Mari, still leaking tears.
I'm sorry.
Mari looked at the square weave of the tatami underneath her toes.
I just wanted Yuri to do a handstand too.
A handstand?
Yeah. I was just trying to help him, but Yuri was... It was too heavy, and so I dropped him.
Mari burst into tears, too. This didn't make To-san seem any less angry.
He's not a doll, Mari.
Big, fat tears rolled down Yuri's red, wobbling face. He cried silently, mouth open but no sounds coming up, just eerily noiseless heaves of his little shoulders. Mari, on the other hand, cried loudly, even though she couldn't help it.
Ka-san always said that it was like she wanted the whole world to hear her and cry with her.
Ah, To-san sighed, before hugging Mari close too. Why do I have two such crybaby children?
I'm not a crybaby,
Mari cried against the soft wool of his jumper.
Yuri's the crybaby.
Yare, yare.
To-san shook her a little bit. Aren't you finished being mean to your little brother? He's the only one you have, you know.
I wasn't being mean to him,
Mari protested, wiping her nose on To-san's jumper.
I was trying to help him.
There was a pause then. And when Mari looked up, To-san was looking despairingly at the door. It was the look To-san got when he wanted Ka-san to appear right there and then. And then Yuri pushed his head into Mari's belly, still crying. And to show willingness, Mari put her arms around him and pet at his soft, wispy hair until he fell asleep.
Yu-chan's hair is so soft,
Mari whispered. Scared that he would wake up cranky and crying again, feeling sleepy herself. She yawned.
Never cut it, To-san.
Never? To-san sounded amused as he lowered Mari and Yuri to the mat.
No!
Mari yawned again. Yuri was so squishy and warm against her, like a soft toy. And he always smelled nice, not like other babies.
Mari liked the sound of To-san's laugh. It was like Ba-chan's, which always made Mari want to giggle along with her.
See you later. To-san's voice drifted through the soft cotton that was piling on top of her. Mumbled Mari, and fell asleep.
10. In an attempt to make her more feminine, Ka-san enrolled Mari in her senpai's newly opened ballet studio.
Mari threw a fit for about a week, misfolding jinbei and towels, breaking dishes, and making Yuri cry when he tried to show her his wobbly, newly learnt hiragana. She couldn't tell you why she was upset, just that she was, and this made her even more upset. And Yuri's round little face crumpling and getting all red and wet was terrible. He cried like it was the end of the world, and his letters got all wet and splotchy too from his tears. Mari ended up crying with him, and the worst part was that when Tōsan found them crying at each other, he just laughed and said, "Ara, ara, aren't you a little too old to be crying now, Mari?" To make it up to Yuri, Mari pulled Nishigori Takeshi by the ear when the little brat shouted mean things as he whizzed past them on his bicycle on the way to school. She threatened to throw his overgrown ass into the sea, while Yuri stood off to the side and pulled until Nishigori cried auntie. Yuri hugged her when they had to part ways in school, which meant that everything was okay between them again. At the end of that horrible week, Mari and Yuri came home through the front, only to find a thin, long-haired woman they'd never seen before in the reception hall. Flicking through the hand-drawn tourist maps of Hasetsu that Tōsan was very proud of. She didn't seem to have noticed them standing in the entrance, staring at her. "Here is a tori, huh?" she read to herself, before huffing out a laugh and sighing their dad's name. Mari thought that she must be a good friend of their parents to be so familiar. Then the woman turned around. She moved like how Mari felt when she got a really good punch going, when she wound up for a hit and the bullies at school couldn't dodge in time. It was beautiful. "Ah," the woman said, "you must be Hiroko-chan's little miscreants." Mari didn't know what that word meant, but it didn't sound good. She stepped in front of Yuri, pushing him behind her. There was a bit of a tug on the back of her shirt, Yuri fisting his little hand in it. The woman's eyebrows, as thin as the rest of her, went right up her forehead. And then she smiled, and it made her look very different. "Well," she said warmly, "you're a really good older sister, aren't you, Mari-chan?"
"Who are you?"
Mari asked. Mari knew she was, just like she knew her teachers were already despairing over her, and that the onsen was the center of her world. The woman laughed, before sweeping an elegant bow.
"Okukawa Minako, Katsuki Mari-san.
Please take care of me from now on." 14. Junior high was the pits. If high school was anything like this, Mari was going to technical college. Except she'd looked up engineering, and it looked dead boring. Even more boring than the history lesson after lunch, and even more boring than the home economics lessons at the end of the day. Like Mari needed to be taught how to use a kitchen. Apparently, "that's not how my mother does it, and she feeds way more people than you in a day," was not a good reason to disobey instructions. Teachers were so stiff and inflexible, and always looked through Mari, like they'd already decided her worth as a student before the year started.
"Oi, Mari,"
said Kobayashi Kenta, spinning a pencil in his fingers like that would impress her. "Try balancing 10 dishes and plates with two arms and not drop them on the tatami, Kenta-kun." And then what Kenta said next made her stomach drop.
"I heard you used to do ballet."
She scrambled over the top of her table to drag Kenta up by the front of his shirt and say, "What about it, punk?"
"Oh yeah?"
Kenta smiled at her bared teeth. This was why they were friends.
"It's just nice to know you have a softer side."
Mari dropped him back into his chair with a hard thunk. "I stopped doing ballet for a reason."
"And is the reason little Yuri-chan?"
It was, of course, but not for the reason Kenta thought. Whatever it was that Kenta thought. Mari had learned how to move from Minako-sensei, who really understood her. She hadn't learnt to waft across parquet like a swan or to leap like the air. Minako-sensei had taught her how to move smoothly, like a predator, how to control her limbs and let her anger simmer under her skin. Mari had taken that and learnt how to cower Yuri's bullies without her fists, how to lounge against the nearest vertical surface with indolent grace, how to eyeball creepy old men in the onsen and intimidate gaijin who disrespected onsen traditions. And Yuri loved ballet and Minako-sensei much more than Mari ever would. The money was better spent on her shy little brother, who only ever really came out of his shell at home and in Minako-sensei's studio, which smelt like wax and powder. "No," Mari told Kenta. "It's because I don't have a softer side." "Sure." Kenta rolled his eyes. "Hey, it's our last year of junior high, huh? Maybe you can grow a softer side for your project this year."
"Ha, very ha," said Mari. "What's Mari's project for this year?" Saori-chan asked, swinging into her seat breathlessly and dropping yakipan from the canteen on Kenta's head.
"Developing a soft side."
Saori-chan, who'd been there when they were four, and Mari had punched stupid Hasegawa Keia so hard he moved away to Fukuoka, laughed. "Don't be silly. Mari-chan has a soft side. You just don't deserve to see it."
"How?" Kenta howled, but he was grinning. Kenta was so full of shit. He walked to the elementary school with Mari every day to pick up his little sister, so he definitely got to see Mari's soft side. She couldn't help it, really, when Yuri would come walking alone up to the gates with his backpack hiked high on his shoulders and his fringe flopping over his chubby little face. He was all alone in school this year, too, his only friend, little Kota Yuko, having entered junior high. So they met up to collect their respective siblings after home economics class. Or, well, she had home economics and he had carpentry.
"It's so unfair," said Mari, kicking at pebbles along the way. "That's the one useful skill I won't learn at home."
"Are you going to insist on joining carpentry classes, Mari-san?"
"Don't call me that," Mari said automatically. Then, "I'm thinking about it."
Kenta laughed, bouncing a pebble back to her. "You can't let the teachers have peace for 1 year, huh?"
"I can cook better than stupid Yamanashi-sensei, and I know enough sewing to mend a jinbei. What else is there to learn?"
"Yes, yes."
There's a gleam in Kenta's eye that just begged to be punched out of his face. "You're the very model of a domestic goddess."
"Kenta!"
snarled Mari, starting to give chase as Kenta danced out of the way of her kicking leg.
"I'm going to kill you!"
16.
"If you would only apply yourself, Mari. Don't you want to be better, Katsuki?"
"Ah, look at your ranking," said Imai-sensei, her form teacher.
"We know you're capable of getting into a university, Mari. Maybe even Osaka University if you stretched yourself."
Mari was practicing a look in her mirror at home. It was the one that would say, "I'm listening to you, but that's all I have the energy for, because urasaina. But I grew up in the service industry, and so this is the extent of my politeness."
It would also be appraising and make the recipient slightly uncomfortable. She tried it now on Imai-sensei.
"Don't look at me like that," said Imai-sensei, swatting the look away like a fly.
He was rumored to have run away from one of the Gucci's in Tokyo to be a teacher in Kyushu.
"Just tell me why."
Mari shrugged. "I know I can, but why should I?" Imai-sensei looked at her for a long time. Mari was getting antsy. Yuri's practice would end soon, and even at a steady clip, the bike ride to the ice rink was pretty long.
"What do you want for yourself, Mari?" asked Imai-sensei.
It knocked the breath out of her.
"I..." started Mari.
"Now, understand, it wasn't like Mari hadn't thought of this before, or that Mari never wanted anything for herself. She wanted the way Katsuki's wanted. Obsessively, consumingly, furiously. But she didn't fixate the way her little brother did. She wanted ragingly to go to Fukuoka for her favourite boy band's concert. She wanted her soccer team to make it to nationals. She wanted a computer of her own. She wanted the onsen to stop losing customers. She wanted her grandmother to either get better or die already. The last one was something she had only ever told one other person, and that was Yuri's stupid little dog, improbably named after some skinny Russian boy that her little brother was in love with. But all these things, Mari understood, were not what Imai-sensei was asking her. I don't know, Mari breathed out, fingers clenching her knobbly, grass-stained knees. And then, getting angry. Why should I know? I'm only 16! Imai-sensei surveyed her with a long, piercing look. He probably used to scare up protection money with that look. Mari should copy it. You're in your last year of high school next year, Mari. I know that. Mari stood up abruptly. May I go now, Sensei? I have to go pick Yuri up. The only reason Mari put up with Imai-sensei was that when she did things like this, he didn't tell her off or lose his patience with her. He just looked at her with that piercing look and then asked uncomfortable questions that she distantly recognized as important. Isn't Yuri-kun 12 now? That's beyond the age he can go home by himself, no? Mari bit the inside of her cheek. Why she had to put in regular appearances at the junior high, which lay along the route home from the rink, was a family matter. Private. Imai-sensei hummed. Your family is very important to you, huh? Of course! Mari was shocked. Wasn't it important to everyone? And Yuri-kun, even more so. Mari switched to biting the inside of her other cheek. I thought we were talking about me, Sensei. Yes, we are, said Imai-sensei. Who we are, it's defined by who our most important people are, isn't it? 18. Her friends were all studying their butts off for university entrance exams. Mari had sent off applications to a couple of vocational colleges that were only a few hours train ride away from Hasetsu. All of them had been meticulously vetted by Imai-sensei, who wasn't even her form teacher anymore, and Mari had already put them out of her mind. It was sakura season, which meant that it was tourist season, which meant that Mari had better things to do than sit in a corner and worry about things that she couldn't help anymore, Yuri. Are you sure, Mari? Ka-san said to her when they were prepping for the dinner service. Don't hold yourself back for us. Mari focused more than she absolutely had to on breading the tenderized pork chops. Of course I'm sure, she said, in the lazy, low way she'd just started to affect. I don't do things unless I want to, didn't you know? That had the benefit of making Ka-san laugh, and being half true. More importantly, honestly, who was going to take over the onsen? Yuri? Give Mari a break. Anyone with two eyes and two neurons to rub together could tell that her little brother was going to go places, and that he belonged on the ice. Not in a perpetually humid onsen ryokan. Mari'd spoken to Minako about this at her bar, though Minako had only given her a highball glass filled with cranberry juice. The ryokan was hers in some bone-deep, undefinable way, ever since the first day she'd stepped into it, and it had been little more than just tall wooden walls and sweet, salty-smelling tatami mats to her. Consciously or unconsciously, all the adults in her life had been grooming her to make every creaky joint and slippery slab of it her own. Mari hadn't realized it at 16, but she knew it now. There's a reason she was in here, in the kitchen, getting her hands covered in egg and panko, while her pretty little brother was across Hasetsu getting his ass kicked on the ice. The ice was his, just as Utopia would be hers. There was no question about it. just as there was no question now that even though Yuri's English was better than Mari's, she still was the one who was stuck with dealing with the gaijin guests most of the time. He was shy and tended to stutter, hiding behind his big brown eyes and the coos of the guests at the cute little son. Suppose we'd better ask the sister instead. Which led to this very moment. Mari, half kneeling by the French tourists who'd arrived a few days before, caught after serving them their katsudon by Mrs. Shangyong.
Oh, Mari, she enthused in English. The train tour you recommended to us was simply wonderful. It was so elegant, the train and the views. Mon Dieu, I am glad we paid for the lounge car.
Her accent was thick, but not so thick as to be impenetrable. I'm glad to hear that, Mari said, and tried smiling a little. Did you try the onsen in Yufuin? Mrs. Shangyong laughed.
Oh no, we couldn't possibly betray Utopia.
That made Mari laugh, surprising even herself. But when she turned to ask Mr. Shangyong for his feedback, she found him looking at her in a way Mari really didn't like.
Yes, it was a very good recommendation, Mr. Shangyong said, his yellow teeth showing. Is there anywhere else you would like us to go, sir? Maybe you could come be our personal guide.
Mari had seen this happen to other girls before, but for some reason she'd never expected it to happen to her. And now it was, and Mari didn't know what to do. Why would he? And in front of his own wife, too. Her silence drew out into a long, awkward pause. Mari found herself twisting her hands in her lap, the way other girls did, the way she had literally never done before. She hated herself for this a little bit. She said, sounding young and uncertain even in her own ears, and gave Mrs. Shangyong a pleading look. To Mari's great relief, Mrs. Shangyong picked up on it immediately. There was a faintly apologetic look in her eyes when she smacked her husband in the side and said to Mari,
"Just ignore him. He's a tired old man. Don't let us bother you, Sherry."
Of course.
Mari stumbled over her words and rose quickly to her feet.
Please enjoy your meal.
Well, Mari had something else to learn from Minako, it seemed. And when she owned the onsen, she was going to have bounces.
21. At 21, Mari had 1 hospitality administration associate degree, earned over 3 tedious years, 2 parents appeased, and a little brother going to America. She'd been at one of her final classes, one of the really pointless customer experience ones, where Minako had dragged Yuri home from one of his competitions by the scruff of his neck, bursting with the news. He was avoiding her, Mari was sure of it, probably out of some misplaced sense of guilt. She tracked him down near the sea wall one day at the end of spring, when it was starting to seem more like summer had eaten into the last cool days of April.
"Oi, brat," Mari said. He looked unhappily at the cigarette dangling between her fingers. Stop looking at me like that.
It's bad for your lungs, Ne-chan.
Mari rolled her eyes. "Well, I'm not going to be a professional athlete, am I?"
I'm a hospitality professional.
Certified and everything. Yeah. Yuri drew his knees up to perch his feet on the sea wall. He took up so little space, her tall little brother, always making himself smaller, except for when he was skating. Mari wondered sometimes if it was because she always liked to make herself seem bigger than she actually was. An outsized presence that made Yuri retreat within the boundaries of himself. They watched the sun setting over Hasetsu in silence together for a while. Mari puffing on her cigarette and watching Yuri's shoulders go up and down with every deep breath he took out of the corner of her eye. I'm scared, Yuri confessed. Mari just about barely held back another eye roll. When was her little brother not scared? He was scared and he still went and did things anyway. That's what made him brave. Of picking up smoking, Mari drawled, blowing out a white cloud of smoke. She watched it dissipate in the balmy breeze. What? No. Mari really couldn't resist teasing him. Good. It's not good for athletes anyway. Ne-chan. Yuri trailed off and curled into his knees next to her. I'm scared I... What's it like? Going to college? said Mari. I went to vocational college, Yuri, not university. And my college was in Fukuoka, not America.
I know it's not the same, but it's different from school, right? All the people.
Mari understood now. She thought back to her first year in Fukuoka, when her parents had insisted she move away and stay in the university dorms for at least one semester for the experience. What Mari had mostly taken away from that experience was that other people her age were domestic disasters, that Utopia had ruined her expectations for living spaces for life, her first sexual experiences, and this goddamn smoking habit. It's a bigger world out there, Yuri. Mari let her free hand cup the back of his neck. They didn't really touch a lot, the two of them. Not like when they were younger. You'll meet more people. Different people. It'll be good for you, I think. Yuri hummed, face still buried in his knees. Mari just stubbed her cigarette out in the damp moss next to her bum when Yuri shifted.
Ne-chan.
He sounded embarrassed.
Did you have a boyfriend in Fukuoka?
Oh, gods. Not really. Yuri looked up at that, his large brown eyes all innocent and liquid and wide.
Huh?
Mari sighed. There was someone when I moved there in the first semester. But then, you know, I came back home, and it was hard with the train ride.
Oh.
Don't misunderstand me, Mari hurried to say. I prefer home. And he wasn't that great anyway. But that's why not really. The more important thing, Yuri, was that I made friends there.
Like Hasami-san?
Like Hasami, Mari affirmed. Hasami came from a long line of innkeepers too, but her family ran a little hotel in Fukuoka. She was the second daughter, but had been the only one who'd understood when Mari moved out of the dormitories back to Hasetsu. Unlike Mari, she had bigger plans than her family business. Like Mari, her family was still her most important people. She'd visited Utopia once, and admired the architecture and the food and the onsen, and nodded understandingly when Mari complained to her about the lack of technology and the upgrades that were sorely needed. After graduation, Hasami had got a job with one of the bigger hotel chains in Japan and was currently working her way through the ranks in Fukuoka.
I'm going to make it to section leader by next year if it kills me,
Hasami had told her during their last phone call. Well, if it kills you, I won't mourn you, Mari had said, and laughed at Hasami's squawk of indignation. In the here and now, Yuri heaved a sigh. I hope I make a friend like Hasami-san. Well, Mari said consideringly. Otherwise, you could always unleash your inner Kyushu beast. If the movies are right, that will definitely make you friends in America. Looking at her little brother flushing and protesting loudly, Mari thought he'd definitely have no trouble with Americans wanting to make friends with him. And then she thought better of it. Never mind. Yuri, don't drink. She ruffled his hair. Stay pure and innocent like this forever, okay? And make sure that coach of yours takes care of you. 23, 24. Hasetsu was a shrinking town. Half her graduating high school class had left for bigger, brighter places, and of the two people Mari actually cared about, Sayori had settled in Fukuoka with a job in a publishing firm, while Kenta had, of all things, taken up a pottery apprenticeship half the prefecture away. And Hasami was all the way in Osaka, having been promoted to the regional office. At least Mari had a futon to crash on if she ever made it up there. To be fair, Mari had almost taken Hasami up on her offer when Yuri came back for nationals, but then December was always a busy period, what with the solstice and then the Christmas travellers enjoying Fukuoka in colder weather. She had only just, the previous year, managed to bulldoze her way into creating a new website for Katsuki Utopia, setting up an online booking system, and getting their ryokan listed on the JNTO's pages for Saga Prefecture, as well as a few international booking websites. All around them, Mari had witnessed the onsens in her town closing down, one by one. Like how she was going to let her onsen go the same way as the others. She was convinced that that had directly led to the highest rate of bookings in December their ryokan had had since Mari was 16. If only she had the statistical skills to show it. Perhaps she ought to send her numbers to Yuri and get him to use that American university education of his for good. And now she was having a simmering disagreement with her parents, usually so easygoing, about ploughing back some of the profits from the Christmas and Hanami tourist seasons into getting the whole ryokan outfitted with Wi-Fi. Whenever Mari tried bringing it up again, her parents started making noises about her getting a boyfriend, getting married. "You'll be 25 next year, you know," Kaa-san said. "I'd already had you when I was 25. "I want us to win," Mari said. "Look at all the onsen closing down. I don't want that to be utopia. I don't have time for that kind of thing now."
"Well, what about Kenta-kun?" said Kaa-san, pretending to not have heard any of that. "You've been friends for so long, and he gave us that discount on those plates."
Try as she might, Mari couldn't stop the expression of horrified disgust that her face twisted into. When she looked pleadingly at her Tōsan, he had the usual placid smile of benevolent amusement firmly in place, eyes crinkling so no one could tell what he was actually thinking. In the meantime, her brother was living it up in Detroit, enjoying the single life and getting boxes of sponsorship goods delivered to the onsen still. It wasn't that Mari didn't enjoy laughing at the increasingly ridiculous advertisements that Guriko managed to convince him to film every year, or the way Yuri's personal endorsement from the leading maker of shochu down south in Satsuma kept Utopia competitively supplied with quality shochu that Minako salivated over. But she felt suddenly, breathlessly, achingly jealous. So she said to her mother, "Why the hell don't we just call our katsudon the Katsuki Yuri-don?" Kaa-san blinked at her.
"Ara, won't that be exploiting Yuri?
Do you want to make money or not, Kaa-san?" And, well, Mari got her financial intelligence from somewhere. So they did that, experienced a slight surge in sales to skating otaku, and Mari treated herself to a trip to watch the NHK trophy in Fukuoka that year, and hang out with Saori. She supposed one good thing about having a reigning national champion for a brother was that it was very easy for one to score complimentary tickets to skating events. Yuri had been sheepish about it when he'd emailed Mari back to say,
I'm so amazed they agreed, but somehow the JSU listened to me and said they would have two tickets under your name, as well as a... P.S. If it isn't too much trouble, could you please bring Vit-chan?
Which only just went to show that Yuri was still the silly little boy she'd attempted to lift upside down when he was 3.
I can't believe Yuri-chan is so grown up now, Saori exclaimed.
She waved her highball around, coming dangerously close to spilling her whiskey and soda onto the forest green of her kotatsu blanket.
And the national champion? Who would have thought?
I did, Mari said, oddly stung. Saori smiled at her.
I guess you always believed in Yuri-chan, huh?
Of course I did, Mari scoffed. What else was I supposed to do? Saori sighs.
And Yuri-chan is so beautiful now. He must have a lot of fans, huh?
Don't even talk about it.
Does he get weird fan mail?
Mari thought about the aluminium rubbish bin they had in the back garden, dedicated solely to burning some of the more egregious bits of fan mail Yuri got from creepers all over the world. He did his best to promote Utopia, bless him, but his efforts did have their drawbacks.
You don't want to know, she tells Saori.
And after a thoughtful pause and an interlude where they had to scramble around after Vit-chan to make sure he didn't reveal himself to any of Saori's nosy neighbours, the building being technically a pet-free residence, Mari said,
It definitely helps us make more money, though.
27.
It had been a good year. In February, Utopia got a TripAdvisor decal, and Mari managed to practice what she'd learnt in her customer relations in the internet age course all those years ago, dealing with guest reviews on the website. In April, they held a joint Hanami and ballet exhibition in the Yokan that had guests coming from all over the southwest of Japan, and Minako getting smashingly drunk with a bunch of French-speaking ballet-dancing tourists who were just as tall and thin and graceful as she was. Mari picked up some French from a particularly solicitous dancer.
Amongst other things.
Come to France, he told her. I think you'd get along very well with the French girls.
I don't speak French, Mari said flatly.
Oh, but I think we communicate well enough, don't we?
In summer, her parents hired on extra hands and packed Mari off to Hokkaido with Saori-chan as a belated birthday present. She spent an enjoyable 2 weeks intimidating them into the highest service standards before flying off with Saori and taking thousands of photos and stuffing herself on seafood, ice cream, and Yubari melon slices from the roadside stalls. Does this look like hell to you? Saori asked, posing for a selfie at the signposted scenic viewpoint in Jiyugaoka. Mari looked at the rolling sulfuric clouds obscuring the feet of the tall green trees, the hints of a placid lake revealed in flashes, and the mountains sweeping up to the depthless blue sky.
Nope. No, it doesn't.
Further up the trail, where fewer tourists ventured, they sat and ate their train station bento.
Mari, began Saori carefully.
Mari made an inquiring noise around her mouthful of food.
This is the first time you've been so far away from Hasetsu, isn't it?
Mari made an affirmative noise and swallowed.
Yeah, why? The way Saori hummed and kept her eyes trained on the view spreading out before them was making Mari nervous.
Do you... I'm not sure, of course, but... Do you feel like we're leaving you behind, Mari?
The question didn't really register at first. Saori's right here with her, wasn't she? But then Mari thought about it, looking at the skeins of mountains unreeling hazily into the horizon. I'm happy with what I have, she started slowly. I have never wanted more. Do you want to? Want more? Mari chewed over it, unsure of why Saori was pressing. If she were 16 again, she'd probably have stood up and walked off. I wouldn't mind seeing more of the world, I guess, Mari said. Go traveling, you know. She had the feeling that Saori wasn't really contented with her answer. But it was true. Mari had something that belonged to her, that she belonged to. She didn't have to wear office clothes, and everyone was used to her ways. She'd like to have a look at other countries, but at the end of the day, like a homing pigeon, she would return to Hasetsu. And she would do so laden with omiyage, as she was this time. Chocolates and 4 whole yubari melons that she'd hand-carried all the way back down south like the filial daughter that she was. The broad compound of Utopia and the warmly lit courtyard, so little changed from when she had been 4, would welcome her, and Mari would feel her bones settle again. When the weather started turning, just before the autumn peak season, Mari was pretty damn sure that one of the Michelin tasters had come by undercover and that her mother's food was going to make bib gourmand. And her parents, finally, after a 3-year war of attrition, agreed to make Wi-Fi available throughout the Yorkan. And then, on one unpleasantly wet December evening, she killed her baby brother's dog. Excitable little Vichan. Named for that ridiculously pretty skater her brother, Mari was positive, was still pining after, who, in the last few years, had grown grey around the muzzle and become Mari's dog as well. A miniature stand-in for Yuri in her life. For the first time in a long while, Mari didn't know what to do. She didn't know what to do about the swelling, aching pressure in her throat and her ears and in between her eyes, nor what to do with her hands clenched together in her lap, nor what to do with the lasting image of Vichan lying still, fur matted with rain and blood, in Dr. Higashi's operating theater before she'd been shooed out. Samari just sat there, frozen, in the warmly lit waiting area, waiting for the verdict. Vichan surviving with just a limp. Vichan surviving, but a quadriplegic dog for the rest of its life. Vichan dead. Her thoughts shied away from it, circling round, before settling on that possibility. The probability of it. The eventual inevitability of it. She knew. She knew. She knew. It was the only thought in the cloudy blankness blanketing her mind. Just the moment of impact playing out over and over again before her eyes. Vichan's vulnerable little body flying across the tarmac, leash whipping out like a taunt after him. Shame was creeping in around the corners now, twinned with guilt, that she had let Vichan tug out of her grasp, that her first instinct had been to kick in the side of the car before she'd rushed over to Vichan's terrifyingly still body. The driver had taken them to the vet, anyway, hadn't said anything as Mari sat stone-faced next to him,
cradling Vit-chan gently in her lap. The car had been filled with Vit-chan's soft, pained little whimpers, the laboured whine of his breath.
Mari. Mari. Mari.
Mari jumped, head snapping up to stare at her mother.
Oh, darling,
said Ka-san softly, in a way Mari hadn't heard directed at her in years, before folding Mari into her arms. Mari blinked into Ka-san's comfortable shoulder and was surprised to find that her lashes were already wet.
There now, Ka-san mumbled nonsensically. There now.
She let Ka-san handle it all, for once, retreating into the attention that Utopia demanded from her, into the rhythms of rising with the sun and sleeping early. Mari took her feelings out on the futons, beating them in the cold, dry sun, and then on the flagstones paving the baths, and then, finally, cathartically, on putting together a shrine for Vit-chan. Mari knew, distantly, that Ka-san had called Yuri to let him know, just as she distantly knew that if she weren't feeling quite so much like she was trying to move things on the other side of a glass wall, she'd have stopped her mother.
And now, her baby brother was making her heart ache on the TV screen in the dining area as he stumbled and fell, and his face reflected the storm brewing in her own chest. All Mari wanted to do was sit with him and cry, loud and ugly, the way they had together when he'd been 6 and she'd been 10, the upset refracting between the two of them until it evolved into an entirely new monster. 28. A little under half a year was enough for Mari to reach equilibrium again and greet her little brother with equanimity and a fortifying cigarette. And if 27 had been a good year up until that rending close, then 28 was beyond words.
I can't believe Yuri-chan is living with his wet dream,
says Saori. Mari cackled. Don't ever let him know you know about that.
Literally wet!
Saori sounded like she was crying with laughter. Mari told her all about Yuri's mad, unthinking scramble for the onsen and the way his shriek had echoed throughout the ryokan when he'd been confronted with the naked truth of Victor Nikiforov. Later on, Hasami furiously messaged her online, complete with angry bear stickers. I can't believe your ryokan got an international celebrity endorsement before Toyomi! Followed with, tell them to stay in a Toyomi hotel when they go to Shikoku. When Mari'd informed her that they'd be there for a day trip, Hasami had replied with, stop sabotaging my career, Mari! Gods! In the wider view of things, Mari supposed that she was uniquely equipped to deal with the phenomenon that was Victor Nikiforov. Is he really an ikemen? Kenta asked when she went out to his pottery workshop to collect their order of tea mugs, sake cups, and tokuri. A bachelorette party all the way from Hong Kong had annihilated the larger part of their old supply and very sheepishly offered to reimburse them an entirely new set. Ka-san's katsudon and its bib goma worked wonders. What? Mari couldn't help but shout, laughing. No, really? Kenta rinsed his hands and arms free of slip. I've seen photographs of Yuri's man. I just want to know if he looks like that in real life, or if the gods actually do exist. Mari took a step back from him. I'm not with him,
she announced, to any gods or spirits that might be listening. Kenta rolled his eyes, before smiling that same toothy grin. I'll take that as proof that they don't. Yes! Mari shouted over him, following him over to where the finished ceramics were stacked up. He is exactly as handsome as he is in the photographs, but what they don't tell you is that he's... She trailed off there, searching for words. Mari. Kenta paused in the act of rolling up a tokuri in newspaper. Are you in love with him? She jerked back. What the fuck? No, that's disgusting! Well, good. Kenta smirked. Otherwise, you'd really be living in a drama. One Russian, two siblings, rivals in love. Mari kicked at him. Shut up! Kenta had to put down the mug he was wrapping. He was laughing so hard. Ugh. Mari gave up, picking the mug up to finish wrapping it. Yuri's already living out his senpai noticed me dreams as it is anyway. That's more than enough drama for one household. The thing was, Mari could deal with the surreal waking dream that Victor's arrival had sunk the whole of Hasetsu into. She could more than deal with kicking the paparazzi out of Utopia, though only after scamming them into ordering at least a tokuri of sake and some top-grade sashimi to go with it. But what she had trouble dealing with was really badly accented Japanese that sounded like a saga elder decided to go on a bender with Russian vodka and gargled some rocks on top of it. You need one of those, what do you call them, audiobooks, Mari said to Victor as he hovered over her shoulder, carefully watching how she rolled up towels. Yuri was at Minako's for ballet practice, and Victor had sloped home earlier in the afternoon. Mari got sick of him lounging around in his loosely tied jinbei like some kind of Grabia model in their front room, and thus was putting him to work. Nihongo, Victor insisted petulantly, in that terrible way he had where he pitched the syllables all wrong and elongated vowels that didn't need elongating. Onegai shimasu. Mari thwapped him with a towel. Audiobook first, she said, clearly in English, before switching to Japanese. And it's onegai shimasu. Onegai if you're close friends. And so they spent the next hour folding towels and linens, which, to his credit, Victor picked up pretty fast. The man had good hands. And listening to Victor practice saying one version of please in Japanese over and over again. When Mari heard, faintly, a few nights later, Victor whining at Yuri to let them sleep together, onegai! Mari reminded herself that her baby brother was a full-grown adult who'd gone through the whole American college experience and should be capable of taking care of himself. And then she chuckled herself to sleep. Summer wore on, hot and lazy. The air conditioning broke down, and of course Victor Knows No Limits Nikiforov paid to have the entire system rehauled. Oh, gods, Yuri whispered to her as they watched Victor oversee the Toshiba handyman at work. I already owe him so much in coaching fees. Mari gave him a long look over her watermelon slice. I'm pretty sure you don't need to worry about it, little brother.
How can I not? Yuri moaned. Coaching fees cost so much, and I looked up how much this system costs online. Nechan, it was so much.
It's a capital investment. Mari shrugged. What she thought privately was that it was as much an investment for the Yokan as it was for Victor. A more obvious announcement of his intentions to put down roots, Mari had never seen before. The thing about Victor was that as capricious as he appeared to be, there was a serious commitment to helping her brother, underscoring everything he did. It was there in the terribly healthy meals he made Yuri labor over.
It was there in the terrible bruises marching up and down Yuri's skin. And it was there in the terrible stretches he forced Yuri into everywhere, even the god's forsaken onsen.
"When's the wedding, Mari-chan?"
old Suzuki-san asked her one evening in his cups.
"Will it be held here?"
Half the dining room seemed to be listening in. She was glad that Yuri and Victor were in Victor's bedroom doing... whatever. Reviewing tape.
"They're not getting married," Mari said firmly. "Huh? They're so close to each other."
"And when Suzuki-san says close,"
sniggered incorrigible old Sakai-san,
"he means close."
They're just very enthusiastic about making sure Yuri wins. Mari set the fresh bottle of beer down a little harder than she meant to. And they're taking their time. At least, Mari hoped that's what Victor was doing. Mari was, despite herself, pretty damn fond of the man. Especially when he was so obviously desperate to make Yuri happy. And especially when the kiss in China inspired her mother to design a Valentine's Day menu.
"Why?"
Yuri'd whined when he'd come back to see Mari and their mother having a spirited disagreement about the best pairings. "Capitalism," Mari'd retorted before going back to making her case for unpasteurized sake. And Kaa-san had won the argument with, "I'm so proud of you, Yuri." Hasumi resorted to calling Mari directly.
"I cannot believe this is cheating."
"You could always come work with me," Mari said lazily, smiling up at her ceiling. "We've got enough budget to hire on extra hands. We're booked through April next year. It's crazy."
"Oh, that's good. Yuri better stay with us for nationals."
"I think that's up to the JSF.
Well, actually. Okay, I gotta go. See you when you come up here in December."
And then she hung up. And Mari reflected that this was exactly why they were friends.
"Oh,"
said Yuri, looking overwhelmed when Mari showed him the booking system.
I suppose you'll need more hands next year, huh?"
Mari opened her mouth to tell him they had enough to hire on a few more part-timers before the wobble in his voice set off alarms in her head.
"Yeah,"
Mari drawled, carefully casual.
"So you better keep on winning those medals, right?"
The little hitch in Yuri's shoulders, the way he froze for a second, the patent falseness of the way he smiled and said,
"I'll keep on doing my best,"
made Mari frown inside. So she went to her father and said,
"Nah, Tosan, wouldn't it be good if family were with Yuri at the finals this time round?"
And Tosan looked at her knowingly.
"Of course," he said. "I'll see if Matsumoto-kun and Nagano-san can come on full-time then."
And that's how Mari ended up going to Barcelona with Minako, and also her brother and his boyfriend slash coach. 28. Completely insane. Barcelona was like nothing Mari had ever seen before. The wide open streets, the tall, beautiful Westerners, the Christmas lights strung up between lampposts that she almost walked into, she was so busy looking all around her at the Christmas market. The Sagrada Familia was an experience too. She'd seen churches in Japan, of course, but nothing like this. The ruthless vitality of it, the grotesque carvings caught in eternal limbo between ecstasy and pain, the cranes building it even higher. Catholics, Mari imagined, must pray very differently from the Japanese. Mari felt almost like a child again, having to be corralled by Minako whenever she started wandering off, wide-eyed with wonder.
and then being taken shopping by Minako, the way her parents brought them to Fukuoka for special treats when she and Yuri were small, though this time she was being coaxed into actually buying things. And then, of course, Yuri got fucking engaged, attempted to break it off within 24 hours, as far as she could understand it through Victor's tight-jawed, wet-eyed summary of the events in the ensuing 24 hours, and caused yet another minor scandal by the rinkside after his free skate. She was going to turn him upside down and drop him on his head the moment his exhibition skate was over. Barcelona was forever going to be associated with Yuri's dramatics in her mind.
Yu-chan, Mari said sweetly, while they were waiting for their departing flight in the airport.
Victor had gone on ahead to St. Petersburg, ahead of his fiancé, her brother. The whole body flinch Yuri did was very satisfying.
When were you going to tell me you got engaged?
After all of 7 months, she didn't say. Yuri rubbed at the back of his neck.
I'm sorry.
That wasn't my question, Yuri.
Well, thing is...
Yuri looked reluctant and embarrassed, but like hell, Mari was going to let him off this time. Not for something as important as his heart.
I didn't really think of it as an engagement ring. It was a promise, a wish, until Victor said it. But the moment he said it, I don't know.
Mari looked at him. It was a good thing Minako had gone off to the bathroom. Yuri, you do want to be engaged to Victor, right?
Yes.
Yuri shot up straight in his seat, looking almost indignant.
Of course I do.
Okay, then. Mari thought about it for a while, before continuing, wishing very much she could have a smoke. You know, be careful with him, okay? Don't look at me like that. I've already told him. But you have to be careful with him, too. Yuri looked down at his shoes.
I know, he said softly. I will.
Later, on the plane, Mari leaned across the aisle and poked Yuri in the shoulder.
Yu-chan, she said mischievously. I just looked up how many babies you need to form a hockey team.
Yuri's splutters and Mari's laughter were so loud, the businessmen diagonally across the aisle from Mari gave them a deeply dirty look. And even later, when they'd landed in Fukuoka a confusing 2 days after they'd taken off and somehow managed to stumble their way dazedly onto the correct train and off at the correct stop, Mari and her little brother were deposited by Minako in front of their home and practically fell over the genkan on top of each other.
Get off me, Mari grunted. You're way too heavy.
I can't, whined Yuri. There's a dog on top of me.
And if the immense love Makachin had for Yuri right from the get-go hadn't been an indication of the turn this year was going to take in April, Mari would punch herself in the face.
Well, Mari said to her mother, even later, after she'd had a bracingly cold shower and was trying to stay awake by sorting the laundry. She was feeling extremely loopy.
You don't have to worry about someone taking over the inn after me now.
Huh?
Yuri and Victor are definitely going to adopt 100 babies. One of them can be my successor. I'll pick them through a televised contest.
Mari! The future spun out in front of her. The business of the next few months, her plans for summer, and the next year, and the year after that, and after that, and after that. No babies. Except for Yuri's probable little brats in the future, and her family around her as she grew old together with her onsen.
Mari threw her head back and laughed and laughed and laughed. The end. You've just finished listening to Don't Give a Damn. If you enjoy the story, please leave Forrestal some feedback on Archive of Our Own or Tumblr. And if you enjoyed my reading of the story, please leave me some feedback at Archive of Our Own as Lunchy or on Tumblr or Twitter as Lunchy_pods. The music used in this recording was Bad Reputation by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. If you like the story and want additional content, make your way to the story's AO3 page, where Forrestal has written some extra parts in the comments. And finally, some reader free talk. Hi, this is Lunchy. So sometimes when your incorrigible internet friends try to get you to record beard porn, what actually happens is that you click onto the author's username and find that they have written a superb character study on everyone's favorite Katsuki sibling, Mari. I mean, I'll get to the beard porn eventually, but because this story, like Mari's voice in the story, was so strong that I really wanted to podfic it straight away. Literally 1/3 of the way through the story, I was already being like, oh my god, this would be so fun to perform and I really relate to or feel empathy for Mari, and it was just so well executed and such a fantastic, like, hilarious read. Just wanted to get to it straight away. There's really too much I love about this to mention. Like, one of the recurring themes that I thought really made it grounding and believable that Mari has set up shop in Hasetsu and never wanted to leave was just her observance of the seasons, which I believe is like a huge thing in Japan, which I'm honestly envious of because I live in a place where the transitioning from one season to another is just very slight, but Japan just seems like boom, cherry blossoms and, you know, falling leaves and snow and all this kind of, you know, awesome scenic visual porn, essentially. And I really liked how Forrestal worked that into the story. I also really love outsider POV stories. I guess I really enjoy that voyeuristic feel of people looking in on someone else's relationship and their thoughts on how it develops and what they notice and all that sort of stuff. So to my great surprise, that really did not happen until she turned 28, which is basically like the last fifth of the story or something. And the rest of it was just Mari kicking ass, taking names, living her own life, having friends and just doing cool shit or just doing shit that she loves doing, which was just so compelling. I think one of the strengths of the story is that it just not only fleshes out the characters that we already introduced to, the Katsuki parents and Mari and Yuri as a fucking cute little baby who Mari drops on his head, so amazing, but also we get introduced to Mari's, like, friends who are incredibly fleshed out people and just have these really genuine sounding conversations with Mari. Like, the scene that impacted me the most when I read the story was when Mari and Sayori go to Hokkaido and they have that conversation, or Sayori asks Mari about whether or not she feels
as though her friends are leaving her behind. And I think there was just like a convergence of all of these different aspects that I love. The beautiful scenery of Japan, they're eating Japanese food, they're doing like a traditionally Japanese thing, they're talking about the future, their futures, how this impacts their friendship, how this contextualizes Mari's life. Like, so much stuff is happening. I love that scene. And I love it even more because, you know, essentially Forrestal is so talented that and had such a strong vision for the story that I'm, you know, feeling lots of feels about essentially two original characters who have nothing to do with the actual Yuri and Ice series canonically. There's just so much like fantastic characterization that goes on throughout the entire story. She doesn't learn ballet from Minako, but she learns how to properly utilize her body to make it do what she wants, to help enforce how she wants to appear, which was so cool. I loved that. All of the interactions that she and her mother have. One is that it establishes that Mari is very like strategic or thinks and is okay with kind of manipulating people a little bit to get what she wants. And the implication that all this sneakiness comes from her mother. So then we get this beautiful additional layer onto the series of, like, you know, Hiroko maybe being a little manipulative herself when it comes to exploiting her son's fame. I think I have to stop my gushing about the story here because, you know, the entire story is so great. It does so many things for me, like, and it just proven to me, like, I didn't have to look up any of the Japanese terminology that was used within the story, because having watched, been a part of manga and anime fandom since I was probably like 10, I'd already amassed quite the knowledge of Japanese culture that was used in this story. So all of the things that I had to look up were just stuff that was not Japanese at all. I had to look up, with one exception. I had to look up the pronunciations for Griko, because I look at that and I'm like, that's glycopocky. But no, of course, in the Japanese pronunciation system, there is no like li sound. It's a li. If you see the li, it's a li sound. So it has probably had to be Griko. And then I had to look up gravure, like what I thought was gravure. But anyway, I looked at it and I'm like, well, I know I've seen that in too many manga. So I know that that essentially just means like models that take sexy pics and they put it in a magazine and people buy it. But I had to look it up. And then it turned out to be gravure, which like, yeah, why am I surprised? It's honestly been such a fun podfic to do just because of the sheer amount of performative aspects, like the how many times I could be performative when it came to recording this story. There was a lot of dialogue between different characters, and so a lot of shitty character voices came out and shitty accents. Sorry anybody who can speak French and can do a French accent. I can't, as is evident, and I wasn't going to learn for what I thought was going to be 3 lines, but turned out to be like a little bit more, because it turns out there was just like a lot of French accented English that happened here that I was like, oh, I'm not prepared for this, and I'm not going to learn how to do this properly, and I'm just going to hope that I don't run into this again. So yeah, I apologize if,
oh, Maki,
you know, misled you into thinking that I could actually do a French accent. I definitely cannot. Another complication that I had to work through when recording this story was just the sheer amount of Japanese words and phrases that are tossed liberally throughout the story, just to remind you, you know, obviously that it's taking place, everybody's speaking Japanese, you're in Japan, and working in Japanese accented words into English sentences, difficult for me, real difficult. Unfortunately, the word ryokan happens so much in this story that I am, going forward, probably going to have nightmares about that word. But that sound was so difficult for me to make that, one, I don't think I ever got it right. And so consequently, there's probably so many, like, variations of that word. Like, it wasn't consistent at all. I'm aware of that. I'm sorry. Literally, it was just beyond me. So between the section of when Mari is 18 and when she is 21, there's like a roughly 3-week break in recording between those two sections. I got sick and my voice went, and then it went down an octave and didn't go back to normal for 3 weeks. So I could have kept recording, but at any moment, my voice may have gone back to normal. And then if I went back and decided that I needed to re-record something, it would sound different. It would annoy me. So I just decided I'm not going to touch this until I'm positive that my voice is going to go back to normal. So if it's kind of jarring between the ages of 18 and 21, the cadence or the pacing changes, that would be the reason. Hopefully it didn't pull you out too much. I want to end the free talk on another scene idea that was really frigging cute that I didn't even pick up on until I recorded it, was that Mari gives Yuri the shovel talk on behalf of Victor. That's amazing. All of the fucking found family feels. That's so good. Ugh. I'm really glad that, Mari and Victor in this story are like buds. It just makes it pure joy. A++. Really hope that you enjoyed the story as much as I did. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. Bye.